Hello and welcome to the CIR podcast, our platform for debate on the most important resilience issues of the day. I'm Deborah Ritchie. So, as governments around the world begin to ease lockdowns, organisations everywhere are looking for a safe and compliant return to work. One company that knows a lot about this is Balfour, the world's largest disaster recovery and restoration provider, working predominantly in the insurance claims market, as well as supporting some of the biggest global corporate companies with their risk management and resilience programmes. Before recent events took over, Balfour's operational teams were busy carrying out physical damage recovery projects following fire and water damage. Much of its recent focus, though, has been on the development of specific coronavirus decontamination and disinfection services in response to the outbreak. With me today, I have CEO of Balfour Europe, Elvire Colac, and Managing Director of Glenabbott Consulting and a leading pandemic expert, David Hutchison. Thank you for joining me. So, Elvire, what should organisations be doing now to get ready to reopen or to restart operations?
Well, obviously, the different businesses and different organisations will have slightly different needs, and they need to understand their own risk and specific requirements in the environment they work. And some of the challenges that they will face is how long they have been closed, what activities do they have to perform. Does it involve the public sensitive production in different industries, food, pharma? Have they had any cases of COVID in the past weeks? So the planning essentially needs to start long before the opening, needless to say. And because it does require quite a bit of time to put all the information together, because there's different aspects, and I'm sure David will say more to that, which have to be addressed. But it's the communication internally, clear messages, so people understand what to expect when they start. The employees have to be informed, and they have to understand the potentially new rules. We have to think of customers as well, but also of suppliers. So there's multiple aspects which really need to be addressed in a relatively short period if preparations haven't been started yet.
Yes, I think the first thing that we need to consider in terms of restarting is about the people element of it. Because there's research going around at the moment that suggests about 40% of people are uncomfortable at coming out of lockdown and coming back to work. Now, you have to address that to get people confidence to come back out and to go to work. That's a critical step. How you communicate with the people, what you communicate with people, and what you can show that you've done to make their workplace a safe place to go back to. Just saying, good news, you can come back to the office next Monday morning, it's not going to work. We need to treat this, first of all, as a people issue. Then we can look at the places in terms of how do we actually prepare the building, and there's a lot of work necessary there. And then you can look at, should anybody actually come back to work at all? And the challenge that I'm putting out is you need to justify coming back, rather than the other way around of saying, well, we're going back. How do you justify the need to come back until we've moved further through the pandemic?
And how can organisations manage the physical risk of coronavirus in the workplace?
I think that there's a number of stages. That there's what you might call the M&E or the facilities one, but looking at all the equipment and making sure that it could restart, air conditioning, lift, all these sort of things, there's an issue there. But actually, what I'm suggesting is that you look at your building and you divide it into three zones, red, amber and green. So a red zone is where there's real likelihood of gatherings of people, so receptions, security gates, all these sort of things, where just the slightest problem, somebody's security pass doesn't work, and we all know it, there's a pile up behind them. You want to avoid that. And then once you're through it, the amber zones would be where the printers are, where photocopiers are, where vending machines are, where people are still likely to gather. And then the green zone is your desk or your work area where you're responsible. So try and build your return plan around those three stages and design how you're going to manage each of those areas of your building so that people know what to do when they come back in.
Elva, would you like to add anything to that checklist, if you like, of managing physical risk in the workplace, the risk of the virus?
Yes, actually, we have seen obviously a bit of a drop in some of the typical work which we would do over the past week, simply because factories are not working and offices are not manned. Some projects have been put on hold during this period, both from the policy or customer side due to health and safety concerns. But we've also seen a significant increase, basically, of companies trying to complete their risk plans and thinking about how to go about their activities once they decide to go back. We believe there is a certain risk going back into business also to we've seen less fires, less water damages since the factories have not been working, but going back into operation after being closed down for some time, there is a risk of a few mistakes being made and causing some additional damages. We have seen quite a significant increase of requests for initial regular sanitation or disinfection work, which is part of some of the plans, or at least inquiries in regards to that. Companies, as David mentioned, are worrying about especially about common areas, social rooms, bathrooms, change rooms, office spaces where there is usually more traffic, reception areas, production floor space where more people are interacting. And all those areas where there's a higher frequency of people is the biggest concern. And these requests are essentially coming to us across the board from manufacturers, from logistics companies, both about warehouses and their fleet. But we also see it from hotels and cruise companies and shipping companies who are concerned about that. So we see a general awareness and essentially thinking on how to implement this in their plans.
So at this point, it seems likely that suspected and confirmed cases of COVID-19 in the workplace could be more prevalent in the future. Have you any advice for organisations on what to do in this respect, particularly as it relates to, say, minimising business interruption?
Well, to answer the question about the future, I can give you an example of our recent past. We have developed a special protocol to deal with these corona cases, both suspected and actual, and we apply those internally in the same way as we would apply them externally for our customers. And obviously, we like to keep our business interruption short as well. The example we have is, even though we have introduced reduced personnel interaction and have strict rules in all of our branches across Europe and the world, staff work from home and the offices are visited only on the most urgent occasions in the warehouses. We try to keep everything on a minimum. We still had a couple branches where we had employees who actually tested positive for COVID-19. The infection was not contracted at work. It was in private circumstances, family members or friends. But nevertheless, we had to deal with it. So we immediately have put into place in those cases the pandemic plans, which we have developed at the beginning of the crisis. It was intended to protect our staff and ensure that the consequences are as small as possible. So the branches were closed and we went through and disinfected it from top to bottom, deep clean. All employees who had been in contact with the infected staff member have been put in quarantine at home. So a further spread was essentially prevented and we could resume, not the affected people, but everybody else could resume work within essentially a few hours. And we have a similar approach for customers. We work 24/7, and if there is a suspected case, we can send a team out within a few hours to initiate all necessary measures, including airlocks, sanitation, and deep clean disinfection, which can't be done by the regular cleaning and maintenance service companies. And essentially, we will obviously respond to all customer requests based on availability, keeping our red alert customers on priority basis.
Thank you. And David, did you have anything to add on with any insight on how the pandemic will develop and what the future might look like in terms of timescales, the impact on businesses, on people?
Yeah, just to kind of follow on what Elvira said, I think it's important that people are seeing that the office they come back to is clean when they come back. So I think actually that is an important factor, what Elvira's talking about, having the place ready for them. In terms of where this is going to go, realistically, I think we're looking at something that could last 18 to 24 months before we see the end of it. Mm. It's likely to be a number of waves. I think a second wave, I've been saying for some time, would be September. I think that may come back a bit down to maybe even July or August. Another wave possibly in November, December. And declining waves through the year until the vaccine's available. Because each time you lift the lockdown, as people go back out, the virus is still there. So, it's not going to go away. It's out there waiting. If you go out, you're going to potentially get it. And to keep that in mind, that we shouldn't be over scared of that by some of the stuff that we read about killer viruses. It is unpleasant and it is a dangerous virus for some, but most folk will be okay in the end. I can see it lasting that length of time, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Businesses and organisations everywhere will of course change and adapt.
They will, and what we're seeing is that there's the kind of a short term, a team put together to look at reopening, whether we should, how we should do it, all the things that like Belfour would do to get the building ready. That's happening. The second piece of work that I'm working on with a number of people is more on the finance side, looking at the long term of, do we actually need that office? Do we need all these expensive floor spaces in the centres of big cities? So looking at a longer term move away from the fixed location approach to more of a home working and more of a change to allow money to be saved in the longer term.
Mm-hmm. And Elvira, going back to the decontamination and disinfection service, is that something that Belfour has always provided?
Well, yes and no. We have always provided environmental services and complex decontamination and disinfection. We have actually extensive experience in difficult and sometimes even toxic environments where health and safety and personal safety equipment is of extreme importance. We have worked on sites with biohazards, and most of our staff are used to work in full hazmat suits and protective gear. Based on this, we are well positioned and well versed in this type of work. However, the coronavirus presented a number of unique and very specific challenges for us. One challenge we had to overcome is how to cooperate between the countries despite closed borders. One of our strengths under normal circumstances is that we could dispatch logistics experienced staff and project managers quickly across the globe or from country to country or and from city to city. Some of the damage situations are so unique, but we always manage to find somebody who has had the relevant experience to give our customers the best possible support. During this crisis, we had to limit our responses to those countries where we have physical presence, and we also had to find a way how to continue sharing knowledge and both for our regular business as well as the corona-related work. Mm. So yes, in part we are obviously prepared. We know some of the things which we've dealt in similar environments, but at the same time, there's obviously been some changes. I would say what one of the things which we have learned is that our internal communication has improved significantly since the start of the crisis, because we have introduced our internal pandemic teams, and central research and development has been sharing more information and collecting more information. Operations teams have been connecting on different levels, and we've organized both virtual and physical trainings to be able to respond better, and plus the development of protocols and adapted to some specific local requirements, because we have some differences still between the countries we work in, and all this has been happening in an extremely dynamic environment, as government relations have been changing nearly on a daily basis, and these experiences we've all probably made during the past week. So I would say overall we have dealt with that similar damages, but we've learned a few things, and we were able to use our experience from the past in a good way to help us respond to these very specific new challenges.
Elvira, I know that you've been working on the Diamond Princess project as well. Can you talk about that at all?
Yes, this was a very, very large project, and this most people know the Diamond Princess had several hundred cases of COVID-19 on board, and it was anchored in the Yokohama port. So together with our customer Princess Cruises and the local Japanese authorities, we essentially developed a very detailed and strict protocol to disinfect and deep clean the ship from top to bottom with all its contents, and including the air ducts and everything. The whole process was done with more than 200 local Japanese staff, as well as with support from our colleagues in the from the U.S. and Canada, who were over there for the whole period. Because at the start of the project, the European countries were already under lockdown and travel restrictions were in place. I would like to point out it was a very complex job, yet it was completed in record time, and we have had no infections among our staff, who've been incredibly dedicated and hardworking during the whole process, keeping in mind, everything had to be under full protective suit, and it was quite difficult working conditions. But in the end, I think we're all happy about the results, and including the customers and local authorities, and everybody was happy when the ship was allowed to sail.
And presumably against the backdrop of all of this work, property damage losses are still happening.
Oh yes, we are working normally, more or less, under the circumstances. The damages we deal with happen with or without the corona crisis. We have seen a drop in some activities, mainly due to customers imposing restrictions on their own organizations and having to organize their own work processes. I think it's safe to say this crisis and the impact has caught many off guard. Nobody would have expected, in January, it would go this far and would be, affecting so many areas, so many aspects of our lives. For us, the difference was mainly in the domestic areas, domestic jobs. Because there, the restrictions were probably the most strict and most difficult to keep the social distancing. But other than that, we keep quite busy.
And what's been the biggest internal challenge for Belfour as a company?
I think it's something which David mentioned earlier. One of the things which is really critical is the concern from employees initially, as nobody really knew what was coming. The news were changing essentially by the minute, and it was to keep our some of our employees calm and address the perceived the real and the perceived dangers. So the internal communication was very important, especially in the beginning. One thing which we found challenging, we're a company used to work in with personal safety equipment and different environments and even in full suits. And we noticed in January already that supplies of safety equipment was getting scarce and difficult to obtain. Some of the suppliers which we worked for decades with were starting to have problems supplying material. This was the first indication, and so we started worrying about pandemic teams and how to organize ourselves relatively early in February, when the first travel restrictions started coming into place. And the other challenge was, the big one was to continue working while keeping our people safe. We see ourselves and have been designated as essential services in a few countries, in others not. But so we've actively contacted authorities and offered our services and pointed out how important the work is. And, we generally say after the fire brigades, we're the next ones to come in and try to help. So, and this has been uptake very well by our employees as well, who are very keen to contribute a little bit, to helping their communities locally.
Mm-hmm. David, has anything surprised you about the pandemic so far, or has everything developed pretty much as you would have expected?
I think probably the thing that caught me out a little was the speed of the spread. You know, a lot of the work I did back in 2009, we had a relatively slow climb, and then it would go up into the U-shaped curve. The level of infection that COVID seems to be a very successful virus, and that it is very infectious, and therefore things happened quickly to us. And we could have been more prepared. I think everybody's reacted very well to it, and everything I hear from folk that I'm talking to, there's been a lot of really good work done. But I think the speed that it came upon us, and it came upon the politicians as well, was probably the thing that was most surprising of it initially, anyway.
How do you anticipate the coronavirus affecting Balfour, Elvia, going forward?
Well, I think the consequences of this crisis are still very fluid. A lot will depend on how long the danger continues. It seems relatively safe to assume it will be with us for at least another 12 months, maybe longer if a vaccine is not found. Some restrictions will ease, others will stay in place. So in general, I think we all have to get used to, some changes, and it might take some time for life to go back to the real normal. There will be changes to our routines that are easier to manage, and others will be more difficult. I believe we will be seeing less travel, and it may not be as comfortable as or easily accessible as before. There will be more people working from home, so some basic administrative and operational process will have to be reassessed and redesigned. And this applies to us, so we're looking into some of that. We believe that disinfection services will become a bigger part of our service offer, and they will need to be adapted for the future in this changing risk environment. In particular, I believe there will be no one-size-fits-all solution. Some industries have and will continue to have special challenges. So I think efforts need to be put into developing those special solutions for them and with them, which will serve them better in their environments. And I think what we are already seeing, the awareness of this type of risk has significantly gone up. So this in itself will have consequences. This is an absolute black swan event, not expected and not predicted, and everybody was more or less overwhelmed by it. So we certainly encourage our customers. We believe we can contribute and be a valuable part of the risk plan and response and help, either with preventing outbreaks or even or after the outbreak. So we encourage our customers to have all the elements of our Red Alert program in place, being familiar with the premises and understand what needs to be done when and in what order, including, new pandemic elements, which should be part of the general preparedness going forward.
Elvia, David, I'm sure this has given listeners a good deal of much needed advice at this juncture. So thank you for joining and thank you for listening. If you're interested in any of the COVID-19 service solutions available from Belfour, you can find out more at www.belfour.com.